as usual, and let's introduce our service to one another. Welcome, delegation of the SKAS. It's been a long time since we have had some gathering together. So we are still also familiarizing ourselves with the atmosphere of Parliament. We've been away here for some long time. But I think that we'll be able to cover. Parliament is not going to be sitting very long. I think only at least we can be next. Parliamentary session will be between the 10th and the 20th of September. So we have very little time to like to get us so much utilize the time that we have for our utmost best. And that's why we allow that SPA guests must come and with us and see what's the new successful SPA has achieved. It's unfortunate that, but I hope our member from, not one member from Northern Cape, but it's another member from Northern Cape who was very instigative that we must host SKA, but I see she's not around, maybe she's coming in late. Yesterday I did a meet and she was very keen that she would be here because she has got so many other questions to fire with him. That's why she is coming. As usual, I'll start with my desk for the sake of introduction. We know one another more. Also, but as a matter of procedure, we will introduce ourselves. I'm going to be the chairperson of the Science and Technology Portfolio Committee with my secretary, Shanas Isaacs, my content advisor, René Osborne Morris. And I've got the new researcher who has just joined us, Dr. Mitchell, going to be working with us. Dr. Mitchell comes from UCT Research Desk. He's going to be working with us. I was just introducing him within myself this morning. I just heard about his whereabouts around, but today formally I've met with him. So you are welcome. I think in the absence of other assistants in my office, let me allow the members to introduce themselves to you. We start from now.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Janita Topper-Dunn, member of the committee. I represent the VA. Thanks.
Good morning. I am Cosi Mwala Nukwani, member of the office committee, and I'm the NC for Tapa. Morning, all. Morning, Chair. And I see a few slips, my name.
Morning, everyone. My name is Sam Flighty, and I'm also a portfolio.
Morning, everyone. I'm Sharma Nacho. I'm the parliamentary liaison officer in the office of Derek Hanukkah.
I think we need help with the creation of the SKAs and must produce the SKAs. Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning to you and to the Honourable Members. It's good to see you again. It wasn't that long ago that we did meet you at the Science and Technology Summit. Many of you were there. It's good to have you there. Yes, I know. It's been a while. That's correct. I'm Thomas Opterheider. I'm Deputy Director General in the Department of Science and Technology. And I have recently been asked to take over responsibility for the department's responsibilities on the SKA project.
Morning, Chair. Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm Ben Fanaroff, the Project Director of the SKA.
The Morning Chair and other members, my name is Moreno Mota, the Deputy Director General from Commission for Operation and Associated Financial Institutions.
Good morning, I'm the Honourable Members. My name is Dominique Zamora, and I'm the Chief of Staff in the Ministry of Science and Knowledge.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Shalani Patrick-Sarne, and I'm the Office of the Director General.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Martin Mulcahy, Associate Director General.
By normal procedure, I was supposed to record it, and if we must speak through the mic, so they can record it.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Mark Mulcahy, Special Advisor to the Minister of Science.
I would also like the ladies and gentlemen sitting here, the party members themselves. We usually like not to marginalize anybody who is with us. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. My name is Ernie Tinch. I'm a content advisor with the Committee of Security and Constitution Development.
Good morning. My name is Marco Schmidt. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer of the German Consulate General.
Good morning, all. I'm Sarah Connor from Media 24.
Good morning. This is the Parliamentary Marching Group.
Thank you,
Honourable Chair. My apologies for being late. I'm Elena Ender. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee and my constituency is in
Canada. This is the question coming from where you come from. Yeah, thank you very much for the introduction. Without which, any time I'll allow to lead us. I've seen some, I've brought to the presentation, I've seen some exciting stories about the survey cut issues that they are starting to produce some information which has been published. That's very interesting. Thank you.
You're right, Chair. So what Oxford are doing, I think I would like to ask Professor Fanaroff to make the presentation, please.
Thank you, Chair. I have to say I'd like to be a professor, but I'm not only a doctor.
I was thinking that because let's say you may have been honored already. That I was still about to ask afterwards.
No, I would have never made it to be a professor, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the opportunity to brief the committee. As you mentioned earlier, it has been some time. So let me not waste any time. What you can see on the title slide is the area where these breakpoints are able to be built, as it was before we started work there. That was the farm Bosdorf and another farm adjoining it called Maisdam. I think the committee is aware that the Meerkat and SKA have now been designated by the Presidency as one of the special integrated programs in infrastructure development. It's called SIP-16. So we report on a regular basis to the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, and that has proved very useful indeed, as I'll mention. But it is opening a lot of doors for us. So, for instance, we've been able to deal with the Department of Home Affairs, Department of Environmental Affairs, to facilitate processes which we require for the SA. So we're finding that very useful. We've had some nice successes there, where, for instance, our human capital development plan, which was reported to the PICC, was said to be a benchmark for others. So, Chair, I'll tell you very briefly what we've delivered over the past 12 months, which I think is more or less along the distance we've asked I mentioned the PICC already. CAS7, as the committee is aware, is a 7-dish prototype that we built in the Karoo. And that was an engineering prototype because we'd never built a telescope like this before. So we built it mainly to learn how to do it and to develop a system that we use for the Meerkat. But it's turned out to work much better than we expected. So it's now very stable. It's available for more than 80% of its time. In other words, it doesn't break very often. And it's now that we finished with the engineering testing, we're able to start doing science. And I must say, Chair, I'll show you some of the science later, but last week, for instance, we had an application from a number of international scientists to use it on a really exciting, cutting-edge project, which I can describe if you want after the presentation. We're still using the CAT-7 for engineering development for Meerkat. So in other words, we develop the systems for the Meerkat and then we test them out on CAT-7. Meerkat is on target. We've issued the contract for the 64 dishes. And we are now in discussion with the companies that will be building the dishes to iron out some of the design issues. But the first dish, as I'll show you, is due on site in December. The radio receivers, we've also issued the contract. Those are being developed. And the indication is that the receivers will perform much better than we expected. So the Meerkat will work approximately double the sensitivity that we'd expected. So not double the sensitivity, double what it calls survey speed, about 50% improvement on sensitivity. On infrastructure, all the relevant contracts have been issued and should be finished by early next year. I'll give you details of that a bit later. Then we're busy with the Department of Science and Technology on the protection of the site. That's in terms of the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Act. The sites have to be declared as protected areas, and then we have to go through a consultation process for what are called the central areas. We've already declared and protected the actual observatory itself, both for Carnarvon and for Sutherland for SALT. So now we're declaring what we call the central areas, where we have a larger area that's protected. That public consultation process will be ongoing, and we've had a number of representations. We're going to request further representations just to make sure that everybody has been able to say anything that they want to say about it. And the minister will then have to make a decision on whether he wishes to hold oral representations. Then on innovation, Chair, we've got some very interesting work going on. In the DUNG collaboration with IBM Europe, IBM South Africa, and the Netherlands organization Astron, we're doing work on high performance computing. And we've got some very interesting and exciting projects here, which are really at the cutting edge of what they call exascale computing. In other words, building computers that operate about 1,000 times faster than anything currently available. That raises a lot of challenges, both in how you structure the hardware and how you structure the software and how you structure the problems. So we're working on those issues with IBM and Astron. One very exciting idea that's come from us and we're developing with them is where we package a lot of high-performance computer boards into a sealed container. And it uses very little electrical power and works very fast and is very robust. So it's the sort of thing you can drop out of an airplane and it'll still work. Because that's what you need in the desert. So I think that this is going to be quite an exciting breakthrough in low power, high performance computing. Then with Intel, we're doing some very exciting collaborations on their latest technologies. I've given us a roadmap and we're working on that. But we're also doing a very exciting project with Intel to make a very, very low cost laptop, PC, to be available for schools and for the public. You know that this kind of thing has been developed in Europe, but with Intel we're working on getting something that's even cheaper. And we have a target price of a few dollars for this tell us then agreed that if we can hit that target by similar design, they will donate several thousand of them to South African labs. So we think that's quite exciting. Cisco is donating quite extensive research instrumentation to one of our universities. Happens to be in the Eastern Cape, Jeff. And we're finalising that project, but that's real cutting edge research. Then on the staffing chair, we filled the vacant post which we acquired, because we're now not only doing the work on the meerkats, but we're also now participating in the design of the SAA. Chair, on the human capital development program this year, we gave our 53 new grants. That makes a total of 492 grants from 2005. As at the 1st of April this year, from that program we have graduated 32 PhDs and 92 master's degrees. We've introduced a new bursary scheme, Chair. I think the committee is aware that there are no maths and science teachers in many towns in Peru. So what we're trying to do is to build up Carnarvon as a hub for maths and science. So we've given bursaries to grade 8 and 9 students from Williston and from Bates Bay to come and live in Carnarvon so they can study at the Carnarvon School or High School there, so that they can do maths and science. And we're providing other support to them as well. And then, Chair, we hosted a number of international conferences and summer schools for South African and African students and students internationally. Then we're participating in the square kilometre rate pre-construction process. That's to develop the designs for the SKA and to prototype those designs. The work packages for the designs have been issued to international consortia. And what that means is that the SKA has been broken down into subsystems. And each of those subsystems has got to be designed and costed and so on. So we're leading two of the work packages. We could have led a number of the others, but for political reasons we decided to step back slightly, let other people from other countries lead them. But what we've done is to take on very strategic areas of work in those work packages, like the system engineering, to make sure that the designs are done very rigorously. So we participate in almost all work packages. We lead two very important ones. We've involved South African industry. We had a sum of money available that we've used to subsidize South African companies to work on these work packages with us. And there are two reasons for that. One is so that they can develop new skills and expertise. And the other one is that they can position themselves for the construction contracts of 2017 when the tenders go out for the SKA construction. So a number of South African companies are working with us on these designs. The International SKA Organization, I think you're aware that the SKA board was formed, and our representatives on that board are Dr. Philip Jaffa, the Director General. He's our voting member, and I'm the other director. We're involved in a range of negotiations, which I'll describe, quite complicated negotiations. We have to make arrangements with a number of other South African government departments to have facilities available for the SKA. So one issue, for instance, is that we will probably require diplomatic status for the organisation. That's just an example, but there are also tax issues, customs and excise issues, work permits and various other things that we'll have to deal with. And then, of course, Chair, we're collaborating with the African Partners Committee, knows that we have made our proposal to the SKA as a consortium with 8 other African partners. So we're working with them to develop that. Now, the construction in our African partner countries won't happen in the short term. So we are now working with a number of our partners on what's called the African BLBI network, the ABN. BLBI is long baseline interferometry, where you combine telescopes on different continents to do astronomy. And by doing that, you can see very fine details of what you're looking at. So we've been working with Ghana, Kenya in particular, and Mozambique and Botswana as well, and Zambia is probably going to join in. Namibia, we want to get active. Mauritius is already working with us, and Madagascar wants to work on this as well. What we're doing is taking second-hand satellite communication dishes, which were used by the telecommunications companies, and converting them to Starlink. These things are not used anymore because of optical fiber. So as you'll see, I'll show you the photos. In Ghana, Vodafone has donated a big dish to the Ghanaian government. Orange, which is France Telecom, is donating a big dish to the Kenyan government. In Mozambique, we'll build a new one, and in Botswana, the telecom company is going to transfer a dish to the Botswana government. Now, Ghana and Kenya, as a result of this, have both established new space institutes, which is quite exciting, and they're in the process of getting budgets for those institutes and getting staff. We've built up a team for the ABM at Pinelands here in Cape Town and at Swartebeerse in Victoria, and we've taken on a number of interns, which has been very successful. They find it very exciting. They're developing the systems for the Ghana telescope. We've also developed a training dish, which I'll talk about a bit later, but that's a miniaturized version of these telescopes where all the electronic systems are as they would be for a big telescope. So as we go into training, we're about to get 6 technicians from Ghana coming down in October for 6 months. We'll train them on that, so they'll build the systems for the smaller dish, which they'll need in a big dish in Ghana. And our own people are doing that as well. The Royal Society in the UK has now made a grant in collaboration with us to take a PhD student from Ghana to University of Leeds, and they're also sponsoring a master's course in Ghana on the astronomy that's relevant to this. The committee will be aware of the paper telescope, which is not made of paper, looking for the signal of the first star turning on in the early universe. And by September we'll have 128 antennas there, and new computers as well for that. And the team is now starting routine observations. Now up to now we've been working on the engineering and the project management, but we said we want to be involved in science as well, and UWC and UKZN are now actively involving themselves in the science. There's a good chance that the team that has built paper from the USA is going to get a grant from the National Science Foundation in the USA to extend it quite substantially. So it'll be another very exciting telescope. Then the committee will be aware of the Seabass telescope. That's the one we got from Telhom, and that's been erected at the site at Losberg, or near Losberg, I should say. And the radio receiver is being commissioned now, and we'll start observations later in the year. Over the next 12 months, Chair, I'll show you the schedule for the delivery of the Meerkat dishes. All the contracts on the infrastructure will be completed. We expect to have fully implemented the core and central area protection, that is the regulations in terms of the Act. And we'll be issuing a tender for an alternative communication system for the area, so where there's any removal of mobile phones, then we'll have an alternative communication system. We're busy at the moment with the requirements definition. So in other words, before we see the tender, we need to know exactly what the user requirements are. We've consulted with all the communities in the area, including the farming community. And as soon as that's completed, we'll go out for the tender. Then we're implementing a big staff development program, Chair, and an intern program. We want to take people from the human capital program and they qualify. Our bursary is all required that people must be available to work for us. So we want to start taking people into the program and developing them into a career path to do that, and we want to take in more interns. At the moment we have 9 interns, but we want to be able to take more than that. The SK pre-construction design will be signed consortium agreements which are being negotiated.
I'm trying to cope up with the presentation in my presentation of the chair, but it seems that it's not corresponding. Is it my money? What about the other number?
I'd like to say.
Is it
not lying, Jim?
Sorry?
It's not lying.
Oh, sorry. Oh, I'm looking at pages. That's a big bang. Yeah. Page 60. Oh, slide. Oh, okay. I was looking at pages before those slides. Okay.
Can I proceed,
Chair?
Yeah, proceed. Thank you. Yeah, so we've been checking consortium agreements for the consortium for theatre design. And by the middle of next year, we have to deliver from each of these work packages the preliminary designs, which will then be reviewed internationally. And that's going to be a lot of work to do in 18 months. The SBA organisation chair wants us to change our branding. So we're going to be going through a program to change the brand that we've got at the moment, which is that nice design, Best Day with Africa, to the international branding. But we've got them to agree that it won't just be SKA, SKA Africa, but with the international logo. But we will be bringing that back to the committee so there's no confusion of who we are and where our loyalties are, of course.
So what
they want, they want to say that the international and component must also be reflected. Correct, yeah. Not just,
I think
so, too, because what we are now is one big international project. So they want to get that ownership that it's an international global organization, you know, it's not a bit here and a bit there.
But it must be, it must reflect that it is led by Africa.
Yes, sir. Yeah, so that they have agreed.
That must also reflect that it's an international project led by Africa.
Yeah. Although we're led by it, but we'd have to have a little bit of diplomatic to there. Chair, there are a number of agreements that you've got to conclude by next year. I'll go through those in more detail, but the key one is the funding agreement, which is who pays for what and how much. Then the African BLBI network, we, sorry, it shouldn't say COVID, it should say convert for God. I don't want Erwin Kinnis to go back to security committee and tell him we're building COVID. So we'll convert to Ghana dish and we'll begin the conversion of the Kenya dish. The delays there, Chair, have not been technical delays. They've been institutional issues, setting up their space institutes, getting their budget and so on. So we're ready to run. We've got the systems built in our labs here. As soon as they're ready, we'll be putting one in Ghana. We're already starting that now. Ghana's quite a big issue because the telescope hadn't been used for a long time. So we actually have to look at the entire thing and move it slightly and put it back down in the areas. So it's a major operation. Then, as you'll see, we're going to start construction of a Mozambique telescope, and we'll be training technicians at East from Ghana, and we expect from other countries as well. The human capital program we want to extend quite a lot.
I saw something about that.
Yes, we're just waiting for the official handover of the Kenya dish from Orange to the Kenyan government, and then we'll start conversion there as well. Mauritius is working now on building another telescope there themselves in collaboration with us. Botswana wants us to start converting their dish, but with the funds we have available at this point, we won't be able to do that. So we're looking at options there. Namibia wants to work with us. Again, we're not funded for that, so we can start working with them on high-performance computing, on the analysis of astronomy data. Madagascar and Zambia both have dishes, but we're looking first at the condition of those dishes to see whether it's possible to convert them. But at this point, we don't have the funds to do more than the projects that we've already started with. So human capital program chair will be taking further students. We want to shift the focus a bit to do more artisan training and FET training. We want to expand the program in Africa. We believe that this can be a real flagship program for technical training for Africa. The ARAP program, I think you're aware of, that's the European Parliament's program to support radio astronomy in Africa. So ARAP is Africa-Europe Radio Astronomy Platform. And we hope that we'll be able to fund a lot of the human capital development, particularly in other African countries, through that collaboration. Then We're also developing what we call big data programs. So these are programs that we'll do in collaboration with the high performance computing companies like IBM, Cisco and so on, in collaboration with South African universities and universities in other countries, in Accra and in Nairobi, for instance. We'll develop these big data centers where people will start by analyzing astronomy data, but through that they'll learn the skills and the expertise of high performance computing and move on to serious research on that. With PAPO, we hope to get the first signals, the epoch of reionization, and CBAS will be operational, start doing observations. So the challenge is, Chair, we want to greatly increase the scope of the human capital program, and the PICC in particular wants all the infrastructure projects to increase their training programs. But as often happens in government, you know, you're told to do something, but you're not given the money to do it. So we're going to have to work out how we do that. Then we also have been told that we must increase the amount that we're spending on science outreach and science promotion. And we're looking at ways of doing that with a target of 3% of the value of the project. The idea is to make science more high profile, and especially for young people, but for the public in general. There's good progress on this Africa-Europe radio astronomy platform. You remember it came from the European Parliament written declaration. We've been working with the European Parliament and the European Commission and with astronomers in Europe and in Africa. And we've put in a number of proposals for funding, and we're waiting for those to go through the various European Union mechanisms. But we think that there are some serious possibilities of funding for collaborative projects. So this is just a mosaic of some of the things we do, which I'll take you through in more detail. Let me talk about the SA organization. It's currently a non-profit company registered in the United Kingdom, but everybody agrees that it can't continue that way. It's got to become an intergovernmental organization. For instance, both we and the Australians said it would be almost impossible to grant diplomatic status to a company. It would have to be an intergovernmental organization. So the question is, should it be a treaty organization or some other kind of organization? Should it be a new organization or should it merge with one of the existing treaty organizations? If it's not a treaty organization, what kind of organization should it be? So those are being discussed by what we call the strategy committee. We're represented on that by Don Dutoy, who's the DST representative in Brussels. And I keep a close eye on what's happening there, and I participate from time to time. What we're negotiating now between South Africa and the SA organization is the hosting agreement. That sets out our responsibilities and duties, and the organization's responsibilities and duties. And it also defines at what point we'll integrate the networks with the SKA Phase 1 telescope. Then there'll be an overreaching umbrella agreement called a project agreement between all the member governments. The committee will remember there are now 10 countries which are members, and India's joining, so that will be 11. There are another 4 countries that attend as observers because they're aiming to join. So that project agreement will then define the intergovernmental agreements and how the governments will participate. The big issue, of course, is the funding model. There's been a long negotiation over how much each country's got to pay and how much they get back and how much must be in cash and how much in kind. Now, this argument over in cash and in kind is, of course, a very difficult one, because every country wants to say, well, I'll put in 10%, but I want to spend it in my own country, on my own industry, and I'll send you the pieces to put together. So that whole negotiation on procurement policy is a very complicated and difficult one. Because what you don't want, for instance, Chair, is to have the telescope itself broken down into pieces made in 10 different countries, and then you have to make more work together. That's not ideal. So that's going on. Another negotiation is evaluation of in-kind contributions. So for instance, when we merge the meerkat into the telescope, that must be valued as part of our contribution. It's not over and above. So the question is, how much value do we get for that? But also, you know, if the Chinese make something, how much they get for that? if the Germans make something out. So all of that, again, as you can imagine, where money is involved, these are very difficult negotiations. And then, of course, the governance model, what kind of organization do we have? So just to remind the committee chair how the SPA will look. The, what are called the mid-frequency parts of the SPA will be in Africa. So that's the dishes, which you can see in the top left-hand corner there, and the mid-frequency aperture arrays, which you can see on the right-hand side. And then in the left-hand bottom corner, you see low-frequency array, which will be in Australia, and what's called the mid-frequency survey array. That was part of the political settlement of the site allocation. So the meerkat that you can see in the top left-hand will be merged into the fish array. And the Australian SPA Pathfinder, which you can see at the bottom there, you can see the red desert there in Western Australia, that will be converted into what's called a survey telescope.
When I was at England, I saw the important image of what in that corner there was developing pieces of that kind, and Professor Alexander
at Cambridge, yeah. The phase one of SPA in the Northern Cape, there are 64 meerkat dishes plus 190 new dishes. So that in itself will be by far the biggest telescope ever built. The low frequency aperture array will be built in Western Australia, and then this SK survey will be the 36 dishes that are built now plus another 60 dishes. Phase two, then all of the dish array will be in Africa, so it'll be 3,000 dishes. And I must say, Chair, now that we're building 64, we're beginning to understand just what a challenge it's going to be to build 3,000. This is a serious engineering program. The mid-frequency aperture array, again, all will be in the Northern Cape, and the low frequencies in Australia. So we're now looking at the question of the integration of the meerkats. When does it become part of the international organization? Originally we were looking at about 2017, 2018, but it's clear that the timescales are going to slip. And in fact that's not bad, so it'll probably only be merged in about 2021, which means that the science programs that we identified for the meerkats will have the time to go ahead. And we'll do very good science with the meerkats. That'll be good for the SKA as a whole, because it'll show the government that you can do exciting breakthrough science. It will also be good for South Africa, because it'll enhance our reputation. The meerkat will be the biggest telescope in the world, and I had a slide in here which unfortunately isn't here now. But the director of the USA National Radio Astronomy Observatory said 2 weeks ago, and he was extremely complimentary. We took him up to site and he visited Vineland. Now the US National Radio Astronomy Observatory at this point is the biggest telescope in the world. And he said he wants to congratulate us because meerkat is going to be the world's leading telescope. And he said the team that we've got here are doing a spectacular job in delivering that. So I can show you his words later if that's of any interest. But it was a very nice compliment to the team. And it also reflects the fact that this is going to be, even before the SK, it's going to be the world's leading telescope. And I quoted at the bottom, he said they will have to come to Africa. People are going to want to come here and use it. So, one of the things that we're negotiating, Chair, is what are our roles and responsibilities, and what are the roles and responsibilities of the International Office. What will probably happen is the DISCO organization will own the telescope, and the National Research Foundation will own the site and the infrastructure. And we'll have to find some way of seeing how we co-manage those things. So what we propose is that it's not practical to manage the construction and operation and maintenance of the telescope from Europe. It's got to be done here. So what we're saying is that the SK South Africa organization, or the National Research Foundation, should be subcontracted by the SK International organization to run all the construction and operations here, and then the CSIRO would do the same in Australia. I think that's likely to be the outcome, but there's still going to be some delicate negotiations about how that could work. The official phase is of a dates chair. The international consortia is starting a design work in October. The next board meeting is in October in Qatar, and then we'll officially authorize them to start work. There'll be a design review at the end of that design process, called the critical design review, will be in the second half of 2016. So that will then say, okay, we're satisfied with these designs, we're satisfied with the cost, and we can now issue the construction tenders based on those designs in 2017. The dish and low frequency aperture rate prototypes. So as part of the design process, the international consortium will build prototypes, and the prototype dishes will be on our site by 2016, and the prototype low frequency arrays, what you saw them design in Cambridge, will be built in Australia. Then SK construction will start in 2018, continue to 2022 on phase one, and the detailed design of phase two start in 2018, and construction there probably starts in 2025. By which time, sure, someone else will be put into your committee. I will be in charge by the time. The design packages I mentioned, Chair, we need the accepted.
That's how many the design that is being developed in Cambridge is being developed for Australia.
That has been developed with the Australians and with a lot of others. All of these consortia are international. Cambridge is leading that one.
Okay.
And then, for instance, the Canadians need one, the Australians need one, we need two, and so on. So the ones we need are acceptance, integration, verification. So all of the systems have to come to us to set the terms on which they're accepted, they're integrated together, and they're verified to work the way they're supposed to work. That's obviously a strategically very important work package. And then we're leading the infrastructure design package for Africa. The very important issue which the board has now discussed at its last meeting, Chair, is what will it cost to build the SKA phase one. So there are two ways you can work. You can either say this is the science we want to do, just build it and, you know, don't worry about the cost. And of course that's not practical. We've been saying for a long time that the costs had been underestimated, and in fact I've said to the media as your committee that we thought costs had been underestimated. That has in fact proven to be the case. There has now been a detailed study of the phase one cost, and the board decided to cap that cost. So in other words, we're now saying we must design the telescope to achieve the science, but within that cost, not an open-ended cost. And that's particularly in the current international economic environment. That's essentially, if you want to get funding, you can't go to the governments and say, just sign an open check. They won't do it. The operations and maintenance, Chair, over 50 years, we estimate to be about 8% of the capex. That will depend on the final design. So if you spend a bit more on the design and the construction now, you can reduce the maintenance costs later. It depends how the funding works. You know, you may not have the money now, so you say, okay, I'll have a bit more maintenance later. You may put it into the initial design. So the costs will be covered by all the members of the SA organisation. We're actively recruiting other countries as well. But it is possible that there'll be other contributions. The Americans almost certainly will come in after 2020. We hope that the European Union will find some way of contributing as well. So the capital cost has been capped by the board at 650 million euros over the period 2017-2023. And the design work packages now have to work according to a cost cap for each work package. The cost caps will require some trade-offs, but they've got to be designed in such a way that those trade-offs don't impact the science as far as possible. The cost of SK Phase 2 will only be clear where the design is done, so we'll learn from Phase 1 what the cost issues are, but we expect it to be cheaper because the technologies will be cheaper by that time. So I just want to talk a bit about the paper telescope, which we're building, as you know, with colleagues from the US. We've got most of their antennas on site now, and the universities are involved. We've been using our interns to do the actual construction. They found it very useful and exciting. There's a Seabass telescope. I've spoken about that already, Chair. You're aware of the flu radio astronomy reserve, so what you're doing now is gazetting the central parts of that for protection, and that's the consultation process we're going through. We've got a register now of all interested and affected parties, which has 3,500 entries, plus minus, and we've had a number of representations, which we've compiled into a report to the Minister.
No,
remember there are three levels of protection. Yeah. So that's the outer level of protection.
Yeah, outer level. Yeah. Okay.
So the regulations are much less stringent for that area. The Meerkat construction chair is on track. It's our major focus at present, and we expect to be fully up and running for science in 2017. But we'll actually start doing science from 2015 when we've got half of the antennas up. Because the way it works, you can do science with some, but not all of the antennas, whilst you're still building the others. So, at the moment, CAT-7 is fully operational. We have what are called cryogenically cooled receivers. In other words, they work at very low temperatures, so they're more sensitive. To really produce a publishable science, and we're getting a lot of requests now for science, and these are just some of the things that are being published. We've already published a paper on a star called Cirsinus X1, which is an X-ray source, which flashes. So we tracked the radio flashes over many years with the Hard Vesco telescope, but now with CAT-7, and that's been published. And we're publishing maps, which you can see in the right-hand side there, of hydrogen gas in nearby galaxies looking for dark matter. And we're doing a number of other investigations, one of which is looking for the remnants of radio galaxies in clusters of galaxies. And the CAT-7 is well designed for that sort of thing. We've also incidentally discovered some remnants of stars which blew up supernovae which we hadn't known before. So Meerkat timeline, we had the concept design review in 2012. Our preliminary design view 2013. First antenna on site in December. The antenna will be qualified. What we mean by that, Chair, is that we build it and then we check it up very carefully to make sure that it can be reproduced. So any problems that might come up, we want to catch in the first antenna. So if we do another 63 of them, we don't have problems. So we'll qualify the first antenna by February. The second antenna will be on-site and accepted by us from the manufacturer on the 28th of March. Then we'll release the different parts of the array in 2015 and 2016, and then the full commissioning availability for science in 2017. So I hope you can hold us to that, Chair. This is what we promised you, and this is what we've committed the manufacturers to in their contract. If they don't deliver on time, then they pay penalties, but we're working with them, because paying penalties actually doesn't help us. We won't have the antennas up and running.
So who are your contractors?
The company is called...
It's a South African company called Stratosat, and they're working with an American company called GD Satcom and a German company called Vertex Antennenfabrik, Antennentechnik. The contract requires 75% of the value of the construction must be based in South Africa, and in fact they'll do more than that in South Africa. So some of the detailed designs will come from Germany, but almost all the manufacturing is local. And you can see there what the telescope dishes will look like. We did the original concept design ourselves. The detailed designs we've done mainly in Germany. We own all the intellectual property and the license, and we're transferring a lot of that to local industry, and we're developing skills in local industry. We're working with Stratosat and GD Satcom. We're also, as you know, we're working on this computing board, which we call Roche. You've seen it before. We're now extending our work on that, and it's becoming a standard for the SAA, used all around the world. And we're now looking at innovations what else can we use the Rachel Board for? So we've got a team now working with various people, Stellenbosch University and others, to say what other applications are there for the Rachel Board. And we're looking at applications in the motor industry and the aerospace industry and so on. I've already spoken about the drone project chair. Sister's working with MMU. And we're also working with South African company on low-cost data storage, developing new solutions at low cost. So this is a picture of the site at Rosberg as it stands at the moment. Here you can see we're doing a lot of infrastructure work there on the left-hand side. What you can't see is a buried building. The whole building is below ground, and all the computers and uninterruptible power supplies in there. The reason why we bury it is because those computers generate radio noise, which could interfere with the telescope. So we bury it underground and we cover it in metal mesh. So the whole thing is sealed off. No radio waves can leak out. What you can see on the left-hand side there, just in the corner, is a new mountain that we built. So all the earth that they dug up from this buried building and the other sites, we piled up into a mountain there. So it adds to the mountain Rosberg to shield the radio waves. So we didn't waste it. We built a landing strip on site now, Chair, and that will be ready. The first landing will be on the 11th of September. The upgrade of the crew substation is completed, so we now have 10 MVA available. And that should be enough for SKA Phase 1 as well. So we probably won't have to put in more electrical power. We're going to have to upgrade the road, Chair. The road is in very bad condition now. The construction trucks have destroyed the road, and we're working now with the Northern Cape government to see how we can re-gravel the road or possibly even seal it, because it is becoming a problem. Some of the contractors are saying that their trucks can't go over it, but this is because we had a lot of very heavy trucks going over this road and they've worn it away. No, that's actually near Carnarvon, Chess, that's about 8 kilometers away. And then what you can see on the right-hand side along the road are specially designed metal poles. So we carry the 33 kilovolt cables on those specially designed poles. And they were designed that way so that there's no sparking, so that they don't interfere with the telescope. That was a joint project between us and Eskom. Then in Carnarvon we've got the point of presence, the POP station, for our 10 gigabit link, and you can see through broadband infra, we've got the SKA network now linked up, and that will be expanded as required. So when we need more capacity, we just change equipment, we don't have to put in new cables at all. So we run the whole thing from Cape Town, as you're aware, but the internet project that we're doing in Carnarvon itself, for people of Carnarvon, will have very, very fast broadband, faster than any other town in South Africa, as a result of this point of presence. We do a number of corporate social investment programs with our contractors, Chair. So, with USASA and Microsoft, we set up a cyber lab at Carnarvon High School, and one of our subcontractors, Optic Bundle, put in an optical fiber link to the school. We trained the teachers in maths and physical science and ICT subjects. And one of the contractors also donated a science lab to the school in Carnarvon, school in Williston. We're now rolling out an e-technology program. We've got a partnership with Intel South Africa. They will be donating 350 laptops to 5 schools in the area. And I hope the minister will be launching that program in November. We're also developing mobile science equipment cards to be rolled out at these schools. And Intel will provide support and teacher training and will help us develop a curriculum based on those laptops. And we're working with a number of other companies to develop the programs for subjects. We're building a community knowledge center in collaboration with Siyafunda, Cisco and Intel. The purpose will be to provide the local community with access to the internet, and will provide business life skills and entrepreneurship training in the centre. TBI Electric has connected the center to our network, and 15 computers donated by Cisco and CFWinder will provide software and training curricula. And we're in the process of appointing a center manager who will also do the training. Chair, there are a number of other projects which we want to do and are trying to do. One is a Working for Water program, where Working for Water has agreed to pay for the labour to take out alien vegetation on the site. It will be a very nice, very big long-term program. They'll pay for the labour, but we have to find the money to pay for the equipment. So we're still in the process of doing that. There are two other projects as well. We bring the learners to Carnarvon on these bursaries, but we've got to put them in the hostel there, and the hostel is very run down at the moment. Not sure if I've got a photo of it here. I've got a photo that I can show you if you want later, Chair, but the hostel is quite run down. And we've got agreement from the Department of Rural Development to pay for labour to upgrade the hostel. But we need capital of 3.5 million rand to do the renovation. So we've been talking to the Education Department about joining with us. And we've also, we're in the process of making an application to the Lotto. And then the health centre there also requires upgrading. Rural Development has agreed to pay for the labour, but we've applied to the Lotto for 25 million rand to upgrade the health centre there. And then there's a number of other projects. One of the things that has been an issue, all of our contracts require the contractors to hire local entrepreneurs and local labour. So it's local entrepreneurs were subcontracted on the infrastructure contracts you see now. And I've had reports that some of them are saying that they didn't make a profit on those deals. I suspect that some of the new contractors were not fully trained on how to do quotes and how to do costing. And that's obviously something that we're going to have to look at. So we will be talking to DTI, for instance, about providing entrepreneurship training. But that is, I think, going to be something that's going to be very important, so that contractors are able to fully take advantage of SAA construction in the area. See, if I can come to the Human Capital Program, I said earlier that we've got 492 grants from 2005. You can see that we've got 100 over the period of time. We've had 117 master students and 74 PhD students, 102 undergraduates. Most of them being South Africans, but we've had 86 people from other African countries. This is the breakdown of the grants awarded to South African students. So you'll see that we don't have enough women in the program. The racial composition has improved, it's still not ideal. This is a breakdown by gender, 150 grants have gone to women, 342 to men. So we are working hard to try to get more women into the program. Our field of study, most of the grants have gone to physics and astronomy and some to engineering. My own view is that we should increase the number of engineering. So we're working with the schools in the towns to improve maths and science. We facilitate the recruitment of qualified teachers. I think that we need to look at that again, because we originally offered to provide some kind of premium to make it attractive for people to go and teach in Peru, and we were told that we couldn't do that, but I've since heard of other companies that do that. So I'd like to reinvestigate that with the Education Department. We want to make Carnarvon a hub of excellence in maths and science, and then we've got bursary programs. We also do astronomy talks, career guidance, teacher training, role models, holiday programs, and so on. We're looking at developing exchange programs to take students around our country and overseas. The result of all this, Chair, is we had 10 people working in radio astronomy in 2003, and now we've got a very big group, 150 engineers, scientists, and technicians, 200 practicing radio astronomy researchers, 70 technicians and artisans, a number of people in Africa beyond our support program. and we've graduated a lot of students already, but we believe we'll graduate another 50 PhD and MSCs in the next 2 years. So I'll talk briefly about the AVN program. The dots you see on the map there are second-hand satellite communication dishes that we want to get our hands on. The one on the left at the top there is the one that's been handed over by Vodafone to Ghana. It's at a place called Nkutunzi outside Accra. And the people you can see there are the Ghanaian technicians and some of our technicians working on the dish in Ghana. This is a picture taken when Minister Hanekom visited Mozambique at the beginning of August. The minister signed an agreement with the Mozambique minister that we will be transporting a dish that we originally got from Telkom, a 7.6 meter diameter dish, to Mozambique. The Mozambicans are developing the site for us now, and we're working with them on the infrastructure. Then at Kenya, that's a picture of the dish in Kenya at a place called Longonot in the Rift Valley. That's a team that we'll be working with together with our engineers. We're just waiting, as I say, for the negotiations to be completed between Orange and the Kenya government, and then we'll start work on that. And that's the story, Chair. I've got more pictures of students, and in particular a lot of the students we've got on the site. If the committee wants to see that, I can show those. But what we've done, we've taken a number of students from Carnarvon and the surrounding areas to FET College in Kimberley. The first lot last year, 8 of them graduated, and I've got it on the site, and we're doing further training with them. So 2 we're doing in 2 this year, and we've got another 4 to next year. And then another 15 were sent to Kimberley with mixed results. Last year all 8 passed. This year we were not so successful. So I've asked for an investigation of exactly why that's happened, so we can correct that problem. But our aim is to take more people to the FET College and then develop them up to artisan status. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the summary presentation. I think the committee has now a feel of what is going on there in terms of all the infrastructural developments around the city area. And seeing themselves, they continue to their ideas. We will never know what they think. Let us allow them, therefore, ventilate their ideas about the development of the state aid in the region. I already have Honorable Dunja, Honorable Clapper Rollins, Honorable Smith, Honorable Blanchy, Honorable Uchumi in the order.
Thank you.
Just before you do it, you talk about teacher training for food, teacher training in natural science. I just wanted to highlight that is important, but more important is to get teachers better aid, to train teachers to be able to teach natural science. Sometimes they have natural science, but they can't teach. That's very important to differentiate between teachers with science background and teachers with the background to teach science.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. My first question has been asked by you. For me, if I get on FET, I think I'm very excited that there is a program to empower communities and also to that understanding that for anybody to be empowered in whatever area, it does not mean that a person can go to a university, but how then do we show that our further education is in these districts are then if you like. Now the question is, which you have partly answered in your last comment. You're going to check why is the Salomon differentiation in terms of the results? Would it not be also wise to go there with the Department of Higher Education? Within their context, and I'm happy within their context, that they want to ensure that SAT is under participated. But the challenge is, it has been reported by the Minister of Higher Education that the majority of SAT colleges, educators, some of them, they are teaching American example, they are teaching engineering, with a man or a woman text, never
done
any subject on that. How in you saying that empowering educators, are you also having a program to empower those? I see here you talk about also empowering educators around Canovan in school. So I do think that here it's a, but is it only a focus on the SDGs that are in Kimberley? I'm looking into the surrounding provinces. There's two states. I wouldn't be more, because I know we are thousands of kilometers in this state. But it's so I just want to say that. Secondly, all SDG colleges aware of this, so that if they are learners in those SDG colleges, that can put an interest. That maybe are not aware other than the beginning of the program of ensuring that the other one, Jay, is this is a very good program. But it's a South Africa one. You talked about tenders. Do you have a let me do this. Please comment, Jay. Was a good program, it's very good, but it can be messed up by this enemy of whatever program that a government wants to do, which is called a tenure. Are you assisting tight enough in ensuring that down the line we're not going to have everybody on the paper? We are to draw lessons from that. So this is quite a huge program for the country and for Africa. So the issue of the last question, because I had a couple of them, I don't know which time. The last question is the audit of scales. The audit of scales in Carnarvon area and in the province, in particular, the northern Cape, because that's where it is. There will be an audit of scales in terms of even if you read out also in the recruitment you have got, you have students that have been upset to have degrees and they can find work. Is your recruitment encouraging them to apply? And if you find that, I mean, example, that in fact they are applying but they don't have the requisites. Is your program also assisting in that? And I do think that the community, around the issue of the community, it's always said that entities don't reach in us. They only go to communities, those that have. But those that don't have most are usually complaining. I hope in your communication with the communities, you are then able to ensure that ordinary men and women who is in the farms in Canada is able to say, when SKA came here, I was then able to count one offspring. But again, it's quite exciting. For me, it has given me a more understanding and a more interesting view on the only issue of disability. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning,
Chair. Please allow me just to first congratulate Dr.
Honourable, there was a motion yesterday in Parliament regarding the five-member team of the SAA receiving or presented with a Bulletin Award. So our congratulations on the Bulletin Award. Then on the presentation, big questions. The first one is, I've got a little booklet here from the presenter of Rose University. And it's mentioned in this book that there are five SAA research chairs and five astronomy-related chairs. Do you plan, or does the department plan more chairs on the SAA and more specifically at the university, the newly established university in the Northern Cape? Then you've mentioned that the United States will only be involved as from 2020, but they are already involved in a paper telescope. Could you please explain to us, because this is this huge, mighty country, and are they involved in the funding, for instance? Exactly what is the part that the role that the United States is currently playing? Why only are they going to join us, or the organization in 2020? And then on the schooling program, I visited Carnarvon and the Seoul site last year on my own, because I only joined the committee later, and I was really impressed. But one of my colleagues, it's in her speaking to Dr. Anna von Skalberg, and she mentioned to me when we were in Carnarvon that this whole school project is not really up and running last year. So how far are they with this project? Do they also plan to do research to determine what the impact of this whole intervention is in the different lives of the pupils at that school? Are they going to follow their careers to see exactly, to determine exactly what the real impact is for this project? Then please also allow me, when I prepared last night for this meeting, I formulated three important questions regarding the SKA and the environment and possible other activities. In the first place, my question is, has the department done an environmental impact assessment or a basic scoping report for the areas where the 3,000 dishes of the NIPCUT and eventually the SKA will be erected? And will the completion and operation of the whole telescope be done according to an environment management plan? They are beautifully upgraded, they are very concerned about this issue. Then also, secondly, one of the recommendations of the task team on shale gas fracking was that the Departments of Science and Technology and Mineral Resources collaborate in developing mechanisms for the coexistence of the astronomy research projects. Now, is the department currently involved in developing mechanisms in this regard? And then shortly, my third question is regarding potential impact or possible interference with the SKA during the full process of possible shale gas extraction. Will you also interact, apart from the mining companies or the gas companies, you also interact with entities like, for instance, Treasure the Peru Action Group, Army Forum, and also Southern Cape Land? Thank you.
Thanks, Jay. Also, congrats on Army Willing. Wonderful program. Lovely to hear from you guys. Your first slide to say that, you know, the context of the issue for the dishes and so on. I'm correct in thinking that the construction had actually started, hasn't it? I saw a picture the other day where they did the concrete foundations that was describing the thickness of the sand and the mountain and so on and so forth. So basically, that's the first one. So it's going to take 5 months. It's 5 months' time. August to December, where the first one fully constructed. That's the time frame, I assume. It seems to me that in a sense, and we must have started the first one, running right through phase one on phase two, there's a continual construction site. Because as you finish one dish, or you're building the next one, next to the next one, you've got to do 3,000 of these. To what extent does that actual building itself, the construction, the most construction I see, you've got guys with walkie-talkies and all sorts of things, you know, coordinating construction. So what is it? Is the construction itself potentially some sort of threat to the radio purity of the area?
mean, how do you manage the whole construction over a 30 period or 20 year period where it doesn't affect the existing one that's just been built to function? Then you spoke about the consultation process for Central Area. I'm not quite exactly clear what the consultation process is about. You mentioned the whole of role players are the important board, but what precisely is the outcome intent of the consultation? I mean, I presume we have the statutory provisions to make a protected area, and it's giving effect to that. Is this consultation process merely meant to get role players in, you know, on board, or is it developing things, or what? I'm not quite clear. On the collaborators, you know, on the hardware, the software, you've got Intel and Cisco on the hardware, I suppose, and you've got IBM and Astra on the software. There was discussion some time back in the committee, at least, I don't know how far it went, but Microsoft had made an offer because they got very large research facilities in Egypt. They're talking about extending into South Africa as well. I was just wondering whether they were involved in any way in assistance on the software side, since they had expressed the view that they'd like to be involved in, not necessarily, necessarily, but certainly within South Africa software development. You mentioned that we're in charge of two consortia. It could be more, but it's politic just to keep it to the two. I presume, well, let me ask you about it. Are our relationship with the Australian issue all 100% now? You know, the bid is over, and now we're all partners, and there's no hard feelings. And, you know, is that part of the sensitivity, or is it much, I suppose it's much broader than that, just for clarity on that? I guess, you know, one thing is a silly question, I suppose, but just slightly, if I look at the photograph of the intended 3,000 dishes, we look at a sort of aerial view, it almost seems as if their location is completely random. I mean, if you pick up 3,000 marbles and throw them through on the ground, because there doesn't seem to be the spacing, for example, and the precise location of each. How does that determine that? I mean, it's got nothing to do with what you're doing, really, I suppose, but I'm just curious to know why they are located exactly where they are. You'll see suddenly there's a gap. If I'm looking right now, you'll see two or three clusters together, and then it's like, it looks like a kilometre or so, then it's another group. It looks completely random to me, but just you tell me why it's like that. So the phase one, which includes all the meerkat, and then we've got phase two and so on, and we're talking about how successful the meerkat looks as if it's going to be given the capacity of the project to do good science, and it's going to be the biggest in the world anyway. Is there any danger, because I mean these big projects require funding, and the funding commitment is not always available. So you're talking about $650 million now. Is there any danger that, you know, that the full 2,000 would be in danger if Meerkat is so successful as we really need to carry on? I mean, could it end up SKA actually Meerkat? Or is there a real serious commitment to doing the entire project at the fullness of time? Just a question we've asked before, but I'm just thinking in relation to construction now. So we got Meerkat, and the first dish will be up and running by December this year, and then they start rolling out. But the critical design review for SKA, which I assume includes the dish design, would be the second half of 2016. Now the whole thing about whether Meerkat design, how it fits in with SKA design, that process of ensuring what we do now is suitable for what's happening in the future. How does that challenge speak to this review? How are we doing now to make sure what we're doing now is appropriate for what's needed just down the road? You spoke about, you know, this whole thing of companies, I mean, of countries making contributions, right? And then how do you factor it in kind stuff? And they all want to do it in kind stuff. So we're going to put Meerkat in as part of our in-kind contribution. What is Meerkat costing us? There's a proper full budget. Because it seems to be, I imagine it's a pretty large figure, actually. And if the full phase one capex cost is over €650 million, it doesn't seem to be a very large figure, to be honest. I'd be very curious to know what the percentage of capex is of that. And so there's money even for whatever time frame you have in mind. I was quite curious about the question about the IP. So we're going to own all this IP on Meerkat. But then just down the road, the FAT gets thrown into the SKA and owned by SKA. I presume the IP then goes with the ownership of Meerkat. Or does it remain with us? It's just a question of who keeps it if Meerkat becomes theirs. Yeah, there was a slide, 44, talking to the grants on the HCD program. And if you've gone, well, that was in 2005, the grant, there was a steady slope upwards. Suddenly this year, a dramatic decline. I don't know whether what that loop is for. Is it basically the program coming to an end, and the next year will be down as well, or is it just a blip and carry on rising as we go forward? And I think that was it. Yeah, thanks.
Thank
you, Chair. It's a money on the lesson science at the primary school and the neighboring towns. My question is that, do we foresee in future that the rollout of this lesson science will go to other schools also? I know it's not easy, but maybe do you have a plan, ask money or someone to ensure that we talk problems when we talk about the benefits of the medical science in schools, not only Carnarvon and the neighboring town, because this medical science is a problem also in our province. So really we need it for the other schools. And then you said also that you want people to come to South Africa. I hope that when they come to get us ever, they will benefit from South Africa. South Africa should be safe, especially when it comes to education. And since we are now part, we are always part of the marketing team of the SKA. It's cost for our life. Now we are at a foundation level. We have to kickstart now of the marketing also. But we don't really like present what we are talking about. Where is our jacket? We don't have the jacket. We want to only tell you about the SKA. You must see we present it really. But they are very serious, they are active in it and they are working in it. So winter is already now on our way out the door. So that can give us our time. We want to keep that now. Not to send this foundation. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jefferson. And my apology for arriving late. On slide 13, as I mentioned, maybe this is too scientific and technical for me to be able to pick up exactly what challenges are. What actually are challenges? Because I have to type in challenges. As a person, not just as a scientist or a technician. Can you clearly give the challenges that you in terms of training and outreach that you mentioned, and maybe the mitigating or the mechanisms to address those crystal clear challenges to a lady like myself. The other thing is the issue of artisans and engineers. What is the average number of technicians for this project and artisans? And where, and pardon me if maybe, because I didn't have time to go through my strength and my annual report, maybe they are issued there. So I'll be very important to hear my attention there. Pardon me if they mentioned it earlier. But I would like to find out what is your average number of technicians and artists for this project? And by when do you hope to reach or to be saying that you have now reached the number of artisans and engineers that would work on the project? So that we don't come to the point where we are being told, and those who here maybe get told that the project can't go on because we lack or we run short of technicians or engineers or artisans. That's my question. The other question is
Yes, on one slide, that I mentioned on slide 5, eh? Delivered over the past 12 months, you say you delivered the 492 grants, but then you refer to 2005, was that, is that a 12-month report, or it's a 8-year, those grants were achieved within 8 years, is it for 2000, or it has been going gradually, we had 5, 7, so the number increasing as the years go by. So that has to be clarified on the next chapter.
Honourable Chairman, did you resign or your question has been answered?
Yes, Chair, thank you very much.
Okay, Honourable Lai.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, it is a great honor to have our doctor here and to be able to speak to you face to face, and maybe you can clarify some of the concerns of the community of Panama. I received a long lot of concerns from that community, from my community there, but I could manage to take it up with the department and everything. But I don't think I will worry about that now. We'll get the opportunity to discuss that with everyone. But I really want to know is how many students will be funded by this SKA budget and scheme, and how many are currently funded? Because I just heard about the 9 internships, and I will out for a minute of maybe you mentioned it there. And one of the issues that I really think that we as a community don't understand the project is because there is no community interaction specifically between the department and the community, or especially the NRM in the community, to bring them on board, explain to them what is happening and what is the process of that. We can do that, and maybe that's the confusion was there. And this is $150 million, €1 million. How much of that South Africa contribute to this project? And like I said, the other issue of the long list we will discuss at a later stage. And this, in your IP policy document, in relation to the protection of the pre-construction document, the design concept, what are the issues there? And I have really issues that we as an African must take note of in terms of the pre-design construction. Thank you.
One or two questions from my side, but a matter of clarification. You advocated immediately after the installation of CAT 7. I remember I was on my way to the SKA conference in the Netherlands when I read about your advocacy that CAT 7 has already started to identify the satellite in one of the distance galaxies, HC3109, I think.
107.
Yes, 107. I think 109, I remember. Now, you have shown in your slide, 32, the CAT 7 site that you started giving publishing. And if I identify on your upper right corner, that is where neutral hydrogen has been identified by the production of the dishes. What I wanted to check is that is that part of what you were watching in during the term of the NCC-1 and is part of what is already the other question goes to what my colleagues have trying to find out about FTC training. The FTC training approach, as far as I picked it up, at first set, you are trying to recruit students for FTC training in surrounding FTC colleges around Kimberley or so. I was of the opinion myself, because this is a long-term, very big project, that you would be actually advocating constructing an FTC college around this area, which is going to be part of the infrastructural development, plus skills development, skills training development of the communities around the region, as a result of the coming of the SKA project. And I think because FTCs are being actually encouraged by the Department of Higher Education, you would take the opportunity to therefore capitalize on that, that now that the FTC, that the Department of Higher Education is emphasizing on the development of FTCs, it's very scared that SKA wishes to develop an FTC training college around the region. I was just thinking that wouldn't it be a good idea to capitalize on what's occurring in the West of the Northern Cape, that its infrastructure is also very much focused on the development of astronomy and related science. Thank you. That's about all of my questions. The honor is upon you to have it all running.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. We're very grateful to you for the questions you asked, the comments you've made. As usual, you highlight the key areas of risk for us around these initiatives, and we hope that we can give you satisfactory answers. We have arranged with Dr. Kanoff that he would respond as much as you can to the questions, because many of them are quite content-focused and quite detailed on the project itself and require a level of insight that he enjoys. But there were a few things that stray beyond just the project and book about the broader context, which between Mr. Moore and myself, we would be happy to try and address. So let's see, Chair, if the committee is satisfied with the response and then. Thank you. So I'll hand over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take the questions as they came up, asked by the Honourable Dindros, Mr. Professor. I'm a teacher training for maths and science. Oh, sorry, that was your question, and Honourable Dindros' question. Teacher training, we've done a number of workshops for maths and science teachers, and for instance, we've taken them to Joburg and so on. The intention is to carry that training further, particularly training with laptops and the cyber lab and the content programs on the laptops and so on. The problem that we have here is that we are actually funded by DST and by the Treasury to build the telescope. So the additional activities that we undertake are done with money that we either take away from building the telescope or are able to get additional funding for. So we would like to do a range of things if we were funded, but unless we're funded, we can't do those things. The other thing is the availability of staff. So we already have people working on our human capital program who are doing as much as they can. We would like to take in more people, and then we can do more. But what is very crucial in all of this is that we need to have more collaboration with other government departments. So we've been trying for a long time, for instance, to get a more active collaboration with the Department of Education in Northern Cape. And there's been very limited collaboration up to now. We hope that that will improve, but it's obviously a limiting factor on what we can do. As far as the FET colleges in Kimberley are concerned, our original intention was to give preferential
bursaries to universities to learners from the Karoo area. When we tried to do that, we found that because of the weakness of maths and science teaching in the area, we couldn't get the universities to accept those students. That is why we came up with the FET program. So we were able to get students into the FET College in Kimberley. The reason we're working with Kimberley is because that's in the Northern Cape. It's a logical choice for us. And again, you know, we would like to go wider if we fund it, but at this point we do what we can. So the lectures in Kimberley, I don't know the quality of those lectures myself. The first 8 students we sent, they all passed. The second lot of 15, a lot of them didn't pass. And what I've heard from rumors at this point is some say the lectures weren't up to scratch, some say you know, they had too many diversions and so on. That's why I've asked for a proper study, that we understand why did the first lot pass, the second lot didn't pass. Some of the second lot did pass, so why did some of them pass and others didn't pass now? So I want to understand that, is it the quality of lectures, is it that the kids weren't motivated, is it that we didn't provide enough support to them, do they need more books, you know, whatever, so that we can make sure if we're spending this money, we're actually getting results, not just sending kids to Kimberley and then not getting anywhere with it. We are in fact talking to the University of the Northern Cape, and we've been talking to them for a long time, for many years, about using the Northern Cape as the University of the Northern Cape as a centre for technical training. Because obviously, as you say, we're in the area. And in fact, what we're exploring with them also is them providing a base for technical training for Africa as well as just the Northern Cape. So those discussions have been ongoing for a long time, but I think they're more focused now, and with the collaboration of the Department of Science and Technology, and as you suggested, the Department of Higher Education, we may be able to go further with those discussions. Are all the FET colleges in South Africa aware? I think the chances are that they're not, and that's why Minister Hartcombe has given us instruction that we must increase the amount of outreach that we're doing. Again, this depends on us being able to get people, and we are working with SASTA from the National Research Foundation, but we would like to be able to get to all the FET colleges. With the capacity we have at the moment, we've chosen to focus on Kimberley and use that as much as we can. The tender system, that's a very good question. Our tender systems report to the NRF board, and the NRF board gives us a very hard time to make sure that we don't do anything wrong in our supply chain management. I think it's fair to say that there's been no corruption up to now. We are subject to internal audits by the NRF, external audits by the Auditor General. They go through our books very carefully. They always come up with some things that we've got them to do. You know, but by and large, I think our systems are working. It is our commitment that we should not, under any circumstances, give out any contracts which we cannot justify transparently. So we go through all the processes that we're required to from the NRF board and the Auditor General. I have in fact spoken to the Office of the Auditor General to get more guidance on how we could make the things flow better. The international tenders, which will be coming up in 2017, will operate under international rules. So we won't directly run those tenders. If we run them, we'll run them on behalf of the international organization. So obviously, in many areas, South African companies will have a better chance than others because they're local. But we won't be able to apply all of the requirements, for instance, of onto those tenders because I'll be run under international rules. So that is not clear at the present time. The procurement policy has high production in any of our tenders. The skills audit, we've done a skills audit in Carnarvon and the surrounding areas. We've made that skills audit available to contractors, and we require them as far as possible to draw people from the local area. Now, in some cases, it hasn't been possible because there aren't enough people with the requisite skills in the area. In fact, when I came to the airport last night, one of Ms. Lyon Hendricks' constituents, Nikki Malkas, is now working in Cape Town, came to me and said, when are we going to have enough activity there that he can go back to Carnarvon because he'd like to be working in Carnarvon? You know, so I think that's the problem, that a lot of people's skills move to Cape Town because up to now there haven't been jobs in the area. So we would always require the contractors to use those people, and we also have an audit of companies in the area. There are 30 companies on our register. 22 of them are suppliers and 8 of them are engineering companies. All of the 8 are involved in the infrastructure contracts, but as I say, some of them are now saying they didn't make a profit. And I suspect, but we'll investigate exactly why, I suspect it's because they didn't have experience in costing. So we would like to expand the skills audit. We don't have the capacity to do it for the Northern Cape. That would have to be done by higher education or DTI. We're very happy to help, but we don't have the capacity ourselves to do that. We also require the contractors to do training to them, so when they take people in, part of the contract is that they must train people. But of course, you know, training on the job is limited, and ideally, as you suggested, it would be good to have an FED college in the area. So the head of our technicians in Carnarvon, Karkos Kaiser and Yanni, is developing a proposal for a technical training facility in Carnarvon. Again, ultimately it comes down to a question of capacity. Do we have the people to run it, and do we have the money to build it? So we can provide the advice and the guidance, but ultimately the other government departments have to come to the party, Department of Education, Northern Cape, Department of Higher Education, and so on. The research chairs question. We were funded to provide 5 research chairs. By moving funds around, we've funded a 6 research chair. We don't have funds to do further research chairs. We're very happy to do as many as we get money for. But ultimately, chair comes down to the question of money. These are quite expensive research chairs, as you know, and they're going to be funded for at least 10 years. So when you add up the per annum amount for 10 years, it comes to quite a big chunk of money. So we're very happy to incorporate further research chairs into the program, provided they are funded. The question about the USA, why didn't they come in now? The USA has a very formal bottom-up process for deciding on priorities in science. The National Science Foundation, which is the funding agency, delegates to the Academy of Science a study of what are the priorities. So every 10 years, the National Academy of Sciences does a survey among the astronomy community to say what are the priorities. They did one in 2010. And there are 5 separate proposals for support of SKA. So they said, well, if there are 5 separate proposals, it means it's not a mature project. So we'll rather not fund it in a 10-year period. They do another one in 2020, and the indications are very good that they will fund it from 2020, because it's, by that time it will be clearly a mature project. There's already a lot of support. So the National Radio Astronomy Observatory, the associated universities and so on, have made special applications to sit as observers on the SKA board because they don't want to be left out. And we visited Washington with Minister Tangle last year and with Mr. Honeycomb this year. We had a number of very useful discussions with government at various levels, State Department, the White House, and also the National Science Foundation. And the indications are that the importance of the project is being felt in the US. Our ambassador there organized meetings with industry, and we pointed out to them that unfortunately they won't be able to build bid for tenders because the tenders are almost certainly going to be confined to companies from member states. And I think industry wasn't happy about that, so you know, what they do that is up to them, I wouldn't interfere in the politics of another country. I'm sure that I wouldn't be left out business possibilities. The paper instrument is a completely separate one, so it's not part of SKA at all. And that is being funded by the National Science Foundation. They're now putting in a new application to the NSF for further funding to expand it quite substantially. And we'll only know that sometime in 2014. We hope it goes through. On the question of the schooling, the impact of the schooling, we haven't done a study on the impact of our educational interventions. We have tried to be as hands-on as we can, and so we talk to the teachers quite a lot, and we talk to school principals, and we try to talk to the students as well. The truth of the matter is it's hard to retain maths and science educators in the crew. We lost one that we brought in there, he went somewhere else. Teachers tell us about various problems which we try to deal with, but we can only deal with them up to a point. The Department of Education has to deal with those problems too, and that's why we'd like it to be more actively involved with us. But what we have done is a baseline survey of socioeconomic conditions, which the University of the Free State did. So they did one in 2007, they did a follow-up in 2009, and we're hoping to do with the Department of Science and Technology a follow-up survey next year to say what is the whole SKA intervention means for business in the area, for socioeconomic development in the area, and we could easily answer questions on the educational impact in that survey. On the question of environmental impact assessments, we had an environmental impact assessment for the current construction that was done according to all the legislation. We're now in discussions with the Department of Environmental Affairs through the PRCC about doing strategic assessment for the whole of the SKA. What is limiting that at the moment, Chair, is that the final configuration has not been concluded. So we more or less know where the arrays will be built, but we don't have the final position. So we can't do the final environmental assessment until we know where that is. You raised the question of the configuration. And if I can perhaps come to that question, I'll ask you talking about it. Honourable Smith, I beg your pardon, sorry, I'm confused here. Okay. Honourable Smith, if he doesn't mind, I'll deal with that now. And the same issue. Sorry, yes, I remember that. The reason why you have a random distribution of dishes is because you want to make a picture which is as good as possible. And if you arrange the dishes in a regular array, then you get artifacts in the picture. So you get what are called, for instance, breaking rings. If you've ever seen a photograph where a camera was pointed partly towards the sun, you get the rings from the fraction of the lens, a little bit like that. So to eliminate that, you distribute the dishes randomly. So the central part for about 20 kilometers will be these random dishes. Beyond that, the dishes will be arranged in spiral arms, and the number of dishes is less and less the further out you go. And that is an attempt to get the best arrangement for the best picture. Now, where it comes back to the strategic environmental assessment is that until you know where those spiral arms are going to be, you can't complete the strategic environmental assessment. So we are talking about that with the TEA, and we have agreed with them on dates when we'll find out the information available so that you can then kick off a strategic environmental assessment for the whole area. There will be an environmental management plan. There is an environmental management plan for the present area, and we work strictly according to that. The shale gas, the department will speak for itself on the collaboration with the Department of Mineral Resources, but from the SPA office we have a lot of discussions, both in the cost team that government appointed and with the companies who are proposing to do the fracking, so that we're aware of what is being discussed, they're aware of our concerns. And there is certainly an indication that there would not be any fracking within the buffer zones around the SKA. So that would have to be maintained by the DMR, but obviously the Minister of Science and Technology, one can't prevent fracking in the area, can certainly prevent the interfering with the telescope. So we don't believe that there's a major risk there. The impacts, if fracking were going on, the major impact would be from trucks driving around and people using shortwave radios. So fracking itself wouldn't directly interfere with the telescope. Do we liaise with other groups, Treasure the Peru and so on?
There was an article from the oil professor, Rob Stellan, I think, who is an expert on environment, who said that actually fracking will never interfere because if it is done 30 kilometers away from the site, 30 kilometers or more away from the site.
That's based on the buffer zone set by the SK International organization, the 30 kilometer buffer zone. So around anywhere you'd have issues with that buffer zone. As we understand it, that's been agreed to. Obviously it would have to be maintained into the future. We do talk to other organisations, but by and large we have left the political discussions to the DST. It's not our business to get involved in the politics of fracking or not fracking. So our job is to ensure that the telescope does not interfere with our personal views. We try to keep up with and politics within the DST chair.
Gave the Minister of Science and Technology this oral mandate to determine if it is, if this is a disturbance, then he or he can rule it out if that particular activity does matter. And I'm saying that because I was the one who passed that legislation. So I know what remained about that. It was a very document that it was so to give that he or she coordinated with the Minister of Communication, which said no. There must be one mandate or mandate so that this thing is supposed to be all totally an objective.
Yes, yeah. It's very powerful legislation, as you said.
I'll appreciate the gentleman there, the two gentlemen can introduce themselves. One that came was the committee was
gentlemen. Two of them. Okay, can you introduce us? Would like to learn when we have people operating with secrecy, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was charged from the KGB about 10 years ago, Chair. So, my name is Paul Dekliata, I'm a journalist for Business Day newspaper. So, I'm on a political correspondence team. The other committee that I was looking at initiative, and so I thought I'd come along and catch the tail end of this, the whole SKA, which I've been following for quite some years.
I would be very glad if you had not heard about it. It's a very important project. We like people like yourself who come and say good things about it. Let's hear the other gentleman.
My name's Richard Davis, Chair. I'm a journalist with SARPA, South African Press Association.
Yeah, okay, I'm also part of the public No. We won't be taking questions now. Let them finish off their response, and then after our shift, their members should be interested in asking further questions. We can then allow that.
Chair, the question of the foundations and the dish. We issued a contract for the foundations. We poured the first foundation last week. It's quite a technically demanding foundation, so not just a slab of concrete, there's a lot of reinforcing steel in it, especially designed because the telescopes have to be able to point to within 5 seconds of arc, which is very accurate, even in the wind. So the foundations are very carefully designed. We'll be putting in all the foundations by early next year. The contract finishes, I forget exactly when, it's March or April. So all 64 foundations will be in. Then there's a separate contract for the dishes. So the first dish will be placed on that foundation in December, the second dish in February and so on, and then we'll run out from there. But we have to do the foundations first and do the cabling so that they're ready, well, that's ready when the dishes are placed on there. So there's already many kilometers of optical fiber and electrical power cabling going through the trenches there, connecting them up. Does construction interfere? We have very strict rules for contractors at the moment, Chair. They have to comply with our rules of radio frequency interference on the site. So no contractors are allowed on the site unless they comply. And we have a committee that sets those rules. And we now have a radio frequency interference manager who monitors and controls any interference. We also test all equipment at HOTEC. HOTEC, as you know, is part of Denel's facilities, and they have special chambers there for testing equipment for interference, so we take all our equipment there, and quite a lot of the contractors' equipment we've also tested there, including whole vehicles in their chambers. So we were very alarmed when there was talk of Denel closing down, because it's a unique facility, but we're glad to hear that Denel doesn't plan to do that anymore. Over 30 years, Chair, what we will be doing with the Meerkat, for instance, is we want to start doing science when we have 32 dishes up. And what we'll do is we'll arrange that the construction phasing takes place in a way that we minimize interference during oscillations. We expect that the same will happen with the SKA itself. And that's a discussion we're having with the SKA's national organization. Do you build from the outside in or the inside out? Or how do you do it in such a way that having trucks on the site is not going to interfere with your oscillations? Obviously, the more dishes you have on site, the more sensitive the telescope, you know, the more careful you have to be. But we will design that in such a way we can do science. The consultation process on the regulations. The Act, as you'll know, sets out a very strict consultation process. You have to publish in national newspapers. You have to inform all of the interested parties. And then you have to have 60 days for people to submit representations. Then the minister has 60 days to consider those representations and make a decision. The Act does comply with the requirements of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act as well. So we believe that the consultation processes in your Act are consistent with those in required by the PAJA. It's quite possible that we may ask for further representations now, and we may well recommend to the Minister to have oral representations as well, because we want to be sure that everybody feels that they've had an adequate opportunity to express themselves. We also have ongoing discussions with two groups. One is the Carnarvon-Williston Van Wyksley Forum. There is a forum elected by people in the area and by all the organizations in the area. And there's an executive committee. I'll talk about that in a minute. But we regularly consult with them, and we also consult with AgriNerd COP. So we meet at AgriNerd COP on a regular basis, and we do have discussions with them. I will, in fact, be going from here to Kimberley to address AgriNerd COP. lot of trouble to ensure that everybody is properly consulted. I think it's fair to say that we'll never reach a situation where everybody's happy. There will always be people who are unhappy. But when I read things like the Telecom Act and see what they can do without consultation, then I feel that our act is not really to come in check. Microsoft hasn't been directly involved. They have spoken to us, but their areas of interest are slightly different to the kind of work that we do. So they did work with us, for instance, on the cyber lab. They gave us a lot of software, and we are having further discussions with them about educational software and so on. But our search programs have been with the companies that are working more directly on high-tech computing, such as Cisco's and Intel's and IBM's and so on. Our relationship with Australia, Chair, once the Cypher was put aside, we've got a good relationship with Australia now. I think it's true to say that there may be one or two individuals who still have a grudge, but by and large, the relationships are pretty good. When I said that we didn't want to grab control of all the web packages, which we may not be allowed to do anyway, it wasn't just for Australia, but you know, it's necessary for all the member countries to feel that they're playing a role in this, because you're really asking everyone to contribute. Chair, on the location of the dishes, I've spoken briefly about that. We don't yet have a final configuration, but if any members of the committee want to come to Pinetown, we can show you how this works. And the African DLBI network, incidentally, is going to be important for a similar reason, because you have telescopes now in Europe and the one at Bob Leeswick, and you can't make good enough pictures unless you have one in Ghana and one in Kenya as well. So the science you can get from that is also going to be enhanced by having those additional telescopes. Will the success of the Meerkat in Laser SPA? I don't think so. The Meerkat can't do what the SKA will do. So it can do exciting science, but the revolutionary science that the SKA can do requires the 3,000 dishes. You can't do the 64 dishes. So what the Meerkat will do is show how exciting the science is, and it will get initial results, and it will test the systems, it will test the technology, it will show that these things can be done. They won't be able to do what the SKA can do, and I think that there's a recognition among the member governments and other governments, even those that haven't joined yet, that they must build the SKA in the long term. I don't think the question is whether it will be built. I think the question is when it will be built. And that will depend on when the funding is available. The critical design review for the SKA dishes will be done in 2016. There are probably going to be three designs which go into the mix. The Canadians are working on a design using composites. You'll remember our initial design used composites. We are participating with them in that. We have Meerkat dishes, and then the Chinese are designing a dish with composites as well. Those will all be considered by the working and there'll be a strict engineering, system engineering process, which will look at the pros and cons and the costs and make a recommendation. And there will be prototypes as well, so the prototypes will be built on our site. The ownership of intellectual property. The Meerkat dishes will always belong to us, although they'll be part of the SKA one. Unless that's agreed and we're compensated, then the ownership will move to SKA, but the IP will remain with us. The same is true of the design process now. The ownership of the IP remains with the organisations that develop it, but the IP agreement is that it will be made available free of charge to the SKA organisation. So in other words, you still own the IP and you can commercialise it, but the SKA can use it for building the SKA. What the SKA can't do is it can't commercialise your IP. So it remains your property in that respect. I can't read my writing on the last part of this question. response here. I've asked for an investigation of why that happens. It appears to be two reasons. One is that our supervisors are saturated. They've got so many students now they can't take on more. And so we didn't get as many PhD and MSc students as we hoped. The other one is that I think we weren't as hands-on as we have been in the past. And so we weren't going around to the university saying, you know, apply for these grants. And we're going to start doing that again this year. The rollout to other schools in the area, we are talking to other schools in the area. Again, it's a question of capacity. So we tried to work with schools in Williston, if I may explain, as well as the school in Carnarvon. They have limitations as well in that they don't have the capacity to do maths and science at the high schools. And that's why we came up with a bursary program. If the Department of Education can work with us, then we're happy to help them to develop in those schools. Going beyond Williston, Carnarvon and Van Bakesley will be difficult for us because we don't have the capacity to do that. But again, we're happy to work with the Department of Education, University of the Northern Cape, or whoever else to roll out the programs to the other schools. And we could certainly encourage the companies that we've been working with to take on those schools. So, for instance, Intel will spread their donation beyond just the Carnarvon schools. It will go out to other schools. And I'm sure we can prevail on them to do also do teacher training beyond the Carnarvon schools.
But I assume some of these initiatives need our side rather than waiting for these departments to know they may not know because they are not very much aware of the internal details of what we're trying to do and the challenges that face us. So I'm of the opinion that these things that you identify through you as our entity, SKA, it should be negotiated by the department and or the NRF with the relevant departments, you see, in order that they find their way into the mainstream infrastructure.
Okay, thank you, Jim. We'll certainly do that for the GST. So we'll roll it out as far as we've got capacity to do, but that was what we would want to do. they're getting a lot of migraines, and they just can't cope with more than they're doing at the moment. So if I get more people, I can do more things. But also, the more money there is, the more you can expand. So if we are told to expand our outreach program, we're happy to do that. If we're told to expand the human capital and the schools program, we're happy to do that. Then you've got to get the money for it. Otherwise, we've got to use money from the telescope, and you know that money is allocated by charity for the telescope. So we use what we can, but what we do is limited by the resources. So when I refer to challenges, it's money and people. At this stage, it's more people than money, because people are just overextended, and it's very difficult to squeeze more out of them. The question of artisans and engineers, how many artisans and engineers? We have done those calculations for the immediate period now. I don't unfortunately have them with me, but I can arrange for those to be given to your committee chair, through yourself, I presume, and circulated to committee. We have been asked by the PRCC as well to give them those figures, so we've got them available. Those are projections, but they're subject to change, because although we can project based on what we think the SK is going to look like, until the final designs are done, we won't know exactly how many technicians and artisans are required. So we can give ballpark figures, and that's what we've done. What we would very much like to do is to get into a discussion with the Department of Higher Education about ensuring that enough artisans and technicians are produced. So our own GRASS program at the moment is based on producing enough astronomers and engineers and technicians. We're doing some artisan training, but it will never be enough. So we would like to get into that discussion with the Department of Higher Education. We give the grants for FET training every year. What we also want to be able to do is to ensure that once young people have done that training, there is work for them. And that's more difficult to ensure. So we've been working with our contractors to say, once we've trained people, you need to take them on for the contract. But of course, there's going to be a period of time between 2014 and 2017 when there's not a lot of infrastructure construction going on, because we've finished the infrastructure construction in 2014. And the engineering work on the telescopes is quite skilled work, so there's a limit to the number of people we can take for maintenance. But we are working on that, and it is our intention as far as possible to continue to take young people to FET colleges. The question of consultation, Honourable Lyon Hendricks raised the issue of consultation information for the community. It is a community forum, and the community forum includes representatives of all organisations and all parts of the community. There was an executive committee. We recently had new elections for the executive committee. The chairman is Wilfred Hoorn, who has continued as the chairman again. The other four members of the committee have changed, and we regularly talk to the committee, keep them fully informed. We also do a newsletter, an Afrikaans newsletter for them, or the CAP, which is distributed by the municipality and by others that is published quite widely. So we try as far as we can to keep people in the loop, and I know that people say that they are not informed. We would like the municipality to be much more active in keeping people informed. The municipality has its own problems, I think, and if the Honourable Lyon Hendricks can help us, we would be very happy to get the municipality more involved in formal consultation process with the community, for instance on the skills audit and on entrepreneurial training and so on. In my view, I must say, Chair, that it's hard to know what we could do beyond running the forum and the newsletters and talking to the municipality. So we do explain the processes and we do set out, I don't know if the committee receives the Northern Cape newsletters. Chair, do you get those newsletters on a regular basis? Okay, I apologize for that. They should have been sent to you. They're all on our website if you want to download them, but I will ensure physical copies are sent to you in the future, as well as our national newsletters. And they're very comprehensive, but they are distributed widely in the area.
If you can try and arrange that, you put them online for all members of the committee.
I'll do that.
So that you see it's something that, as and when it appears, it automatically appears online for the member.
I'll do that immediately, Chair. The committee secretary can give me a list of the email addresses. I'll make sure we do that. How much does South Africa contribute to the SKA? That's one of the issues for negotiation. The international organization, the other member countries, have all said that they want South Africa and Australia and the UK to contribute more than the other countries on the basis that we're hosting the telescope and the UK's hosting the head office. That's an issue for negotiation. Both we and the Australians have said that there's a ceiling on what we can contribute, and we will not be prepared to go above a ceiling. At this point, the negotiations are ongoing. One or two countries are being very hardline about what they can contribute and what we can contribute. Without naming names, there's a large country that says it's only a developing country, can't put in much money. Which I don't think is necessarily the case, but anyway. So those are quite difficult negotiations, and they won't be concluded before next year. So the board is aiming to have the funding agreement signed off next year for phase one. For the operational funding, that will hopefully also be signed off at the same time. So I can't answer that question at this point. The intellectual property question, as I mentioned, the intellectual property that's developed in a design phase will belong to those who develop it, but is freely available to SKA. On NGC 2109, Chair, that paper has been accepted for publication. I'm not sure if it's appeared yet, but I'll make sure a copy is sent to you. And they are looking at a number of other galaxies. What they're doing is saying the strong point of CAT 7 is that the telescopes are all placed together. So you can see very broad structure better than other telescopes. Other telescopes miss it. So they're looking at the neutral hydrogen in these galaxies to use it to understand the dynamics of the galaxies, to see where they can measure the dark matter in those galaxies. So there's some quite interesting programs going on. Well, epoch of ionization, we certainly won't see with CAT 7 or even with Meerkat. But we hope with the extension of paper we'll be able to see that. And of course, LOFAR is trying to see it, and the Australians with the MWA are trying to see it. So there's a lot of competition, because that is probably a Nobel Prize winning science. So we hope that we manage to do the paper first, obviously. Then the FEE colleges chair, again, now if we can have that discussion with Department of Higher Education, we are very willing to help on whatever we can do. It would be nice to have a college in Carnarvon, and obviously we will collaborate with that. As I mentioned, Sky Serendiani is already very keen to work on that sort of thing. So if the other departments come on board, we'll be very happy to do whatever we can to assist. And I'll be fine. And the University of the Northern Cape, Chair, we are certainly discussing about using their infrastructure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair,
Bernie, honourable Chair, honourable members, you forgot to mention two other things. These are legislative interventions. The one is we're thinking of registering Dr. Panaroff as a national key point and extending the AGA Act to cover his house. Because if something were to happen to him, it would be disastrous for us.
Yeah, I can't be a national key point, I'm
insecure. If I may just add, I think
wanted to comment on the role of our relationship and partnership with the Department of Basic Education, the Department of Higher Education, planning, because that has come through in several of the questions that the honourable members have asked. First of all, with the Department of Higher Education and Training, we did in fact have discussions with the DAGT about the role of the University of the Northern Cape with respect to the SKA project. And we reached agreement in those discussions that we were not in a position to establish further sites for high-level astronomy activities and research, because we are already funding many of them in Cape Town at UWC, in Durban, all over the country at the South African Astronomical Observatory. So there's already a wide range of astronomy research and training sites, and it would dilute our resources too much if, jointly with the Department of Higher Education and Training, one were now to designate the new university there as another point. However, in discussions with the National Research Foundation and the Department of Higher Education, it is agreed that the sort of research focus of that university would be on heritage studies. This is an important area of research, not related to astronomy, but it's an important area of research that is not well established from a structural point of view in South Africa. And so we have identified an interest, a common interest, between the DSD, the National Research Foundation, and the Department of Higher Education and Training in establishing capacity around this at the high level end, at the highest field end, within the university, the new university in the Northern Cape. However, because the SKA project dominates the landscape in the Northern Cape so strongly, and there will be a very strong need for IT-based skills, information technology-based skills in the region, it was indicated to us by the Department of Higher Education and Training that one of the first programs that the university would be running is precisely in IT, for the reason of the SKA project in the Northern Cape. Turning to the role of further education and training colleges, we are right now in the process of discussing with the Department of Higher Education and Training the type of skills and the number of skills needed for the full phase construction of the SKA. So once the SKA construction actually starts in about 2018, I think is the date. By that time, how many artisans of certain kinds do we need? How many technicians of certain kinds do we need? So we're trying to scope that need, both in terms of the types and the numbers of skills and people that will be required. And the purpose of doing that is precisely to be able to assess where are we going to get those skills from locally, so that in the event of overseas contractors getting local construction tenders, that they don't end up bringing hundreds or thousands of artisans and technicians in from other countries, for example, from the other countries that are members of the SKA consortium. So we're looking at this, and this is in part where the human resource development plan, I think that Dr. Fanaroff was referring to earlier on, which has been prepared for the strategic infrastructure program. This is part of this. So we're in consultations with the department on how to address this. And clearly a major source of those skills is going to be further education and training colleges. I presume the DHET might wish to make sure that those colleges that already exist and are established and are able to deliver on those skills, because they already have training programs in those relevant skills, I would presume they might want to make sure that they maximize the role of those institutions. But the feasibility and possibility of establishing further education and training colleges specifically to service the needs of the SKA project is something that we can certainly discuss with them on the basis of the human resource plan that's been developed. The Honourable Ms. Professor Lawrence asked a question about the more research chairs and whether we might be establishing more research chairs. At the moment, all the available funds for research chairs have been fully invested. Members may recall that we get funds from Treasury in chunks for research chairs. I think there have been three major tranches of funding for research chairs, and all of those funds are fully subscribed at the moment. So, and we don't anticipate getting another tranche of funding for research chairs in the near future. So at the moment, our capacity to fund more research chairs, new research chairs I'm talking about, is extremely limited. Turning briefly to the role of the Department of Basic Education, many references have surfaced here about the role of schools and the partnership between the SKA project and schools in the region. The members and the Honourable Chair may recall about halfway through last year you asked us to come and make a presentation to you on human capital development. And I started off contrasting the mandates of the Department of Science, Technology, Higher Education and Basic Education, the budgets available to us and the institutional platforms that we have, to make the point that clearly the Department of Science and Technology is not responsible for the education system, but we have a number of important partnerships with them around projects of common interest and common and projects of national importance like the SKA project. I've spoken about higher education training rates on the DBE side of things. One very important area in which we have a common interest is in the role of science centers in supporting education. We have briefed you, honorable members and chair, about this in the past. We support 31 science centers, and almost all of them are involved in educational outreach and education support activities. And a very important one that we're developing right now is in Tofimbaba, and I think you've been there or you've been briefed on this. So you know that... Yeah, you've been there, sorry. So, and I know that some of you come from there. So you know the partnership that we've established with the Department of Basic Education and the Eastern Cape Department. And so these are the sorts of partnerships that we can explore with the Department of Basic Education. And we are actively discussing with that department the rollouts and the use of science centers in supporting education and training and education experience and learning experiences in schools. So this is certainly an angle also in Carnarvon that we would be exploring further as we move ahead. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman. Remember, one comment I wanted to add relates to the question about Microsoft, which Dr. Panarov has already answered, but part of that is the question, I think, was whether there are other programs or things we're working with Microsoft on, and the answer is yes. We just recently launched the program together with Microsoft, which is looking at piloting a research program to connect the rural communities to broadband using the so-called white space spectrum. And this is the utilization of an allocated spectrum, which of course the agreement has been also given by our regulatory body. So if this, which we think is going to be, when it gets successful, will probably be used as a footprint to extend continuity to broadband for our communities. Thanks.
We actually were approached by Microsoft through one of their executives. I don't know whether it's the same person that has been dealing with you, Dr. Hanau. He's a very top senior person in the African desk of Microsoft.
Now, we actually had been the managing director of
Service. Because that told us that it's only the Department of Science and Technology that they have not been able to deal with and allocate some money to help us developing the Microsoft within the country. there are projects that must be in Africa rather than in South Africa, yet they are Asian. So I remember Dr. Rene was not from Norris. You remember the person from one of the CSIR? You remember, can you brief what he said to us?
I don't recall the person's name, but simply because of clashing programs, they were not able to come and fully explain to the committee what they wanted to discuss in the committee.
No,
I think
it's
quickly
did that. That was the presentation that they were supposed to make fully in the committee so that it takes a decision of the committee. But briefly, they were interested in funding more of South Africa's, especially Department of Science and Technology programs on IT, because I said they are involved very much in Africa, but it's interesting that they are very much involved in South African situation, and they want to increase that. I think they even estimated something like 9 billion.
I just got clarification that the president mentioned is also part of the discussion. But the issue of, we have been working with Microsoft for a number of years. We signed a number of agreements as well in terms of Medicare development. The delay that the Honorable Chair is referring to has actually been the challenges with the Department of Communications, not with DSC, because of course there were some regulatory issues there. The reason why it's been easier for them to deal with Kenya in the past than South Africa, it has just nothing to do with the Department of Communications.
Right. Now, I want to remind members that we have run out, we are almost out of time now. We're supposed to finish the session at 12:51. And if we are still prepared to sit, I am prepared. So I have no problem with that. If a member still wants to ask questions and get responses, we can continue if you are prepared for it. But it's now 12:51, just let you know. Everybody, as long as I can allow everybody, as long as you agree that it's not me worth delaying. That's the thing. The consensus must be with the committee. Yeah. It must be with you. If you want to, otherwise we can discuss your question with them separately, yeah, if you want. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. So that's it. Thank you very much for coming.
This is Tana Joseph, Chair. She's the first black South African woman to receive an SKA postdoctoral fellowship. We sponsored her from a PhD degree. Then she studied for a PhD in South Africa in the UK, and now she's back here. So this is a real breakthrough for us. This lady, whose name unfortunately didn't write in the slide, I forgot to, is doing a PhD at the Centre for High Performance Computing with us. These are some of the people we sent to the FET College when they were at Top Leersook. And there's some of the work that the guys were doing in Kimberley. This guy is one of our African program scholars. He's actually from Nigeria, not from one of our partner countries. But he's done his PhD and he's had a large number of publications already, been very well received around the world. These youngsters are in Durban, and Precious Fasana there in the centre is winning all the prizes for physics at UKZN, and she's doing spectacularly well. This is one of our students from Madagascar. She's also done her PhD with us, and now she's at the SAO doing a postdoc. Michelle Knight's won the Fame Labs competition and was a runner-up in the international one. Cecilia's working with us, one of our engineers. Audrey Dikali is one of our operators and will be studying further as well. She has a BSc degree and she wants to go further. Priscilla Malkas is one of the first group of FED students we had, and she was doing her N2 this year. She's on staff at the Rosberg site. And Virgilian also is in the same position, also been doing his N2. I was talking about Silvio Serangiani earlier. He's
operations and maintenance manager. He's the one who wants to develop the technical training program in Carmarthen. Rodney Springbok and Donald Rosenkrantz are two of the technicians who also speak to the FEP. So I thought the committee may just want to see some of the people who are on the site that come into the ACD program for the future.
Thank you very much. I thought you would also show a photo of one of the top awardees last week from UKZN, who is dealing with the SKE in her research work in UKZN. She's dealing with computer-related work in SKE, and she was received an award last week when we were winning awards with the minister. Thank you very much for all the questions and the presentation. I hope everybody is